Well, there's an element of myth in accounts of most historical events, particularly when they capture the public imagination. But when it comes to the Vietnam War, journalist and historian Mark Dappin suggests that every stage of Australia's involvement has been misremembered and obscured by myth, and he believes it's time to set the record straight. Mark's book, Australia's Vietnam, Myths versus History, tackles six popular myths that have dogged Australia's memory of this war, and he provokes us to think more broadly about memory and what we consider to be historical truth. He joined me in the studio to step into this complicated arena.
Thanks very much, Geraldine.
Could we take a look at some of the specific myths that you hoped to put to the sword with this book, Mark? It's fair to say it's widely believed that the men who did serve in Vietnam received no welcome home parades, or if they did, that these were disrupted by protesters. Now, this is a hugely durable story. Mm. Your research suggests this was not the case.
It wasn't the case, and it wasn't even believed until the 1980s. That's what I find strange. And even newspapers like the Sydney Morning Herald, where I worked for a long time, who reported welcome home parade after welcome home parade during the war years, were quite happy to say there had been no welcome home parades after the war years. Every battalion, apart from one, which was the 6th Battalion after its second tour of Vietnam, received a welcome home parade. These welcome home parades, many of them were much larger than the very largest of the moratorium demonstrations in Melbourne in 1970. Mm. They were an outpouring of support that's just been forgotten. It's just been written out of history, as has, I guess, the pro-Vietnam War movement. The government, the Menzies government, brought us into the Vietnam War, and successive Conservative governments were elected with the idea that they would keep us there. Mm. Those people who voted for the coalition with that idea close to their hearts, at some point they stopped standing up and saying we existed.
Yeah, and look, it's very interesting this, because the only time an appreciable number of demonstrators turned up at a welcome home parade, you say, was during 9RAR's march through Adelaide on the 9th of December 69. But you say it's remembered differently to the way it was photographed and reported at the time, and inspired a particularly wild and bizarre mythology.
Yeah, I mean, and we say an appreciable number. There were 20 people, more or less, performing a silent vigil at 9th Battalion's Welcome Home Parade in Adelaide. And yet, as the years have gone by, the idea of the strength and violence and hatred expressed towards soldiers by protesters has grown so much that one book contains the claim that a member of 9th Battalion in uniform was stabbed to death after this protest. In fact, nothing like that happened. Nobody was stabbed to death in Adelaide that day. I'd be surprised if anyone was stabbed to death in Adelaide that year. Certainly no, but there's no reports of anybody in uniform being attacked by anybody in the Adelaide Advertiser during that period.
And you suggest that to an extent these myths have been borrowed from the experiences of veterans in New Zealand and the US.
Certainly the strange thing is, if you look at the New Zealand experience, and in New Zealand, although there was a kind of Australian 50s-style conscription scheme, every New Zealander that went and fought in the Vietnam War was a regular soldier, a de facto volunteer. If you look at the New Zealand experience, there actually was a fairly large demonstration at the final and largest, and it's only the largest of two welcome home parades that were held in New Zealand during the war. There really was a big ballad calling the men murderers. There really was a theatre of blood spread out in front of their armoured cars as they passed on parade. You know, when these things happen, they are photographed, they are reported on extensively. These things didn't happen in Australia. There are no photographs of this kind of thing happening, with the exception of the Adelaide Parade and Nadine Jensen in 1966, who was doused in an admixture of red paint and kerosene, doused herself in that admixture, and ran at Lieutenant Colonel Priest, who was leading 1st Battalion's march through the first Welcome Home Parade in Sydney in 1966.
And what, you know, the people who allegedly called them baby killers and rapists, and they were spat on and so on. Again, you can't find evidence for that?
I certainly can't find evidence of use of the word baby killer in any context apart from directed against abortionists in the 1960s, even up to the My Lai revelations. I think that's something that's been grafted on from movies. This idea that, you know, a protest was a process by which somebody scrawled baby killers on a piece of paper, tacked it on the head of a stick and waved it at soldiers is nonsensical.
Okay, so if this didn't occur, why are the veterans remembering it?
I think in part it's a question of the development of apocryphal stories. The veterans feel rejected. Some veterans, and you know, it's not a universal experience, it's not a universal feeling. Some vocal veterans feel they were rejected when they came home after the war.
Did they not feel welcome?
They didn't feel welcome. And therefore, if you just tell somebody, I didn't feel welcome, then people go, oh, poor you, whatever. You need a story, and you need a story that is personalised. You need, it's not enough to feel that you were disapproved of. You need a physical embodiment of that disapproval to explain to people. I'm not saying nobody was ever spat on. How would I know? I do say some of the spitting incidents during demonstrations that are alleged didn't happen because the demonstrations themselves didn't happen. But when some veterans are saying, I was spat on, we were spat on, they don't actually mean they themselves were physically spat on. They mean I felt spat on.
Metaphorically.
They mean I felt my service was spat on. When they say I had blood tipped on me, we had blood thrown at us, they mean we collectively were treated this way, perhaps only by one person, perhaps only by Nadine Jensen in 1966, but we felt that way, you know. We felt like our service had been bloodied, like our service was denigrated, like it was spat upon.
Were you able to ask any of them whether it was their own verdict on themselves? I've always wondered this, you know, whether they also came, as the mood about the war shifted so much, whether they... That dreadful thing for a soldier to think, well, is it all been useless?
I think a percentage of Vietnam veterans think it was all useless. But I think you'd find that from every other war as well.
Well, I don't know whether you would. I'm not sure that you would. I mean, you wouldn't feel like that if you came out of, you know, the invasion of Europe, which you were just celebrating at the moment because of the liberation and what it did achieve, you know?
Well, I think there was a level of disillusionment that's perhaps forgotten even there. And certainly I think there's a lot of soldiers that came out of the First World War thinking, oh, maybe that wasn't the best way for a generation to spend their lives.
But look, I know I'm hopping around, but there's so much in this. Like there was another big discussion about whether Australia had participated in its own form of My Lai, the truly shocking massacre by American troops. I think that's been absolutely now verified. That did not occur in Australia.
No.
But in considering this myth, you ask why men feel blamed when they're not and admit to crimes of which they've never been accused. What do you suggest is the answer to that?
I think that in the case of atrocity allegations, there's more to it than I wrote in my book, more to why people confess to them. I think some people are simply after the notoriety of it all. You know, why would you impersonate a Vietnam veteran, which is a widespread phenomenon, perhaps more than people realise. But I think there's another way where some veterans of some conflicts, including Vietnam, recast atrocities to make themselves the victim. So we were made to do these things and look at what these things as a consequence have done to us. I think that's part of the reason for some people.
So perpetrators or near to perpetrators twist it round in a sense, possibly just a sort of a psychic horror that they live with or something from having been in a totally separate set of circumstances, you know.
It is quite bizarre. Like you can understand how you could say, okay, I was forced to do this and look what this has done to me. But when you haven't done it is quite baffling.
So look, I mean, what do you take from this? I must ask you, because I know that listeners will say, did you want to find this? Or did you go in with a particular view? And what's it left you with in terms of the role of historians?
No, I don't think I wanted to find it. What I thought at the beginning was it should be possible to write about the Vietnam War in the same way, whether you believed it was a just war or an unjust war.
Mm.
I wanted to try and write, because I have written a book about the Vietnam War before called The Nashos War, and I wanted to write a kind of classically liberal history. To do that, I did realise that I would have to talk only about the war, not the aftermath of the war, because so much of our historiography and journalism about the Vietnam War is in fact about the aftermath of the Vietnam War. It's all about these demonstrations that didn't happen, the spitting and the blood. But while I was writing that book, I had a kind of, kind of intellectual crisis. It wasn't so much that I was being told by my interviewees things that I knew hadn't happened, but certainly there were a lot of things in the literature that other people had produced that I came to realise couldn't have happened. And I started to think, well, is there any point in writing history? Is there any point in journalism? Is there any point in being on the radio when, you know, people seem to be not telling the truth? I don't even want to use the word lying, because it isn't lying. I'm not sure about the very nature of memory anymore. And, you know, there's a lot of literature about this that I was unaware of at the time, that memory is not simply a set of facts that we recall. It's built upon by everything we see. It's built upon by experiences after the fact. And I've started to question my own memories of pivotal events in my own life, and to realise that some things that I've always believed to be true actually cannot be true.
Oh, Mark, that's just a sort of a small conclusion to draw.
Yeah, I'm sorry to bring it back to me.
No, it's very interesting. I can tell you, after many hours of interviewing people, particularly in the 90s, about recovered memory. Mark, thank you very much indeed. Very thought-provoking.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Mark Dappin is a journalist and historian. His latest book is Australia's Vietnam, Myths versus History, and it's published by New South Publishing. It's a brave book, as they say.